Hey everyone, Star Master Jeff here, back with my special bonus series where I talk about how I plan that good old AdventureCast campaign, available exclusively for our Patreon listeners. In this debrief, I'm giving you a look at how I ran Nexus of Betrayal, Thorn's flashback story. I go over what was planned, what surprised me, and exactly how much I'm improvising behind the screen. If you're into GMing, world building, or just curious about how the story takes shape, this one is for you. So, first of all, Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season. My wife, Casey, and I drove down to North Carolina to spend the holidays with her family. We were there for over a week. It was a super fun time, and we drove the whole way. So it was a 16-hour drive down, a 16-hour drive back. We stopped in Philly at the midway point each time, and it was super fun. Had a great meal in Philly each way. One thing, though, is that we did a lot of car karaoke, and I think I went a little too hard. You can hear it in my voice because it is shredded. And we just got back last night, and I realized I had to record this today, and I was going to sound very weird and very different. So apologies for the quality of my voice. So this adventure takes place on Polyphen, which is one of my favorite planets in the sector, even though the characters really haven't gone to it in the normal present-day plotline. But we did visit it once before. We were in orbit around Polyphen for Felix's story when they went and heisted the orbital data vault. And we, of course, dealt with the death of Petey and everything that happened there. That was orbiting around the planet Polyphen, which is a ultra-urbanized night world. Essentially, every square inch is covered with cityscape, really not a lot of nature left, and it's completely dark all of the time. There is a sun, obviously. The planet is orbiting around a sun, but due to pollution and towering buildings and sky platforms and all kinds of stuff like that, casting shadows or blocking direct sunlight, there's very little actual sun that reaches down into the depths of the streets where most people live. And that sets the scene for Polyphen, which is sort of a cyberpunk-inspired world based on the world in Blade Runner, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I really am happy to explore it a bit more here in Thorn's story. So Thorn's backstory is that he was in jail for 10 years, and now he's on work release because Omnitech has bought out his contract, and when he arrives on Polyphen, he's waiting to go and join up with Project Red Wing, which may sound familiar to you as well. That is also addressed in Felix's backstory. Project Red Wing is the Omnitech experimental research to copy people's brains into artificial intelligence, which obviously kills the person. And then they use that AI to participate in tests. What they are actually trying to accomplish is still a mystery. But they did get Petey, they tried to get Felix, they've gotten hundreds of other people, and Thorn was on the chopping block without even realizing it. Of course, as we learned earlier in the season, Dr. Voss went in and took a bunch of people with certain skills that she didn't think would be missed and redirected them from their current orders and projects, including Thorn and Project Red Wing, and shipped him on off to Kamiri 4 to steal an Omnitech ship, the Scapegoat, and make their way over to Wafisa to pick her up. So if it wasn't for her, doom would have been spelled out for Thorn. But here on Polyphen, just a few months after Felix's orbital data vault adventure, Thorn finds himself with the ability to track down and kill Salarist, which is the man who he thinks is the person that betrayed him and landed him in jail. Also the man who stole the family's company out beneath him and his mother. So there's a lot of world building here, and there's a lot of stuff going on, especially around religion. We haven't really touched on that before. Shintech is what his friend Kano follows, and Shintech is based on Shinto, the Japanese spiritual practice, and tech. So Shinto plus tech is Shintech. And it's not a new idea that I've had. It's actually a reuse of an idea from a short story that I wrote. If you're interested in it, it's my only short story that I decided to publish. It's called NET 432. And you can find NET 432 on Amazon. And you know what? I'll put a link in this post if you're interested in checking it out. It deals somewhat with Shintech and rebirth and blurring the lines between humanity and artificial or robotic intelligence. And it also has really strong themes of family and regret. So if you want to be a little bit depressed and read a cool tech story, check out that link. So some of those themes are also present in this adventure because we have Mara and Brick. They are from Block 6. It's not directly spelled out in the adventure, but there's a lot of information about it said through multiple points. But Mara and Brick were in Block 6 when the Grav Lev crashed into it, killing Salarist and killing everyone in her family, as well as a lot of other people in Block 6 and everyone else on board the Grav Lev. So Mara, as the sole survivor from that floor of Block 6, wants to avenge her family. She believes that Salarist is still alive, as does Thorne's mother, obviously, as we find out. And Thorne's very excited to find that out. Block 6 is just one of many, many different buildings here on Polyphen. Obviously, there's blocks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, on and on and on. But those numbers loop around again and start back at Block 1 as you move from one section of the city to another. Polyphen is also not just completely one company that owns it. It's split up into multiple regions, and multiple different companies own those regions. So we are in the Nexus portion of the Viridyne section on Polyphen. So Viridyne owns essentially a whole country, and Nexus owns like a state in that country. And then within that state, there's a section with a bunch of blocks in it. And we are hanging around in Hakame Prefecture, which is that section. And in Hakame Prefecture is Block 6. So that's how you can kind of zoom down on that. You have the country, which is Viridyne, the state, which is Nexus, the city, which is Hakame, and then Block 6 is like a little section of that city. And that repeats across an entire world. Viridyne has that country, but some other major corporations own smaller countries or land masses here on Polyphen. And that's how they've colonized an entire planet from sea to shining sea, no nature to be seen anywhere, just simply dirt, cement, twisted steel, grates. And in some sections of the world, the infinite, slightly toxic, acidic rain constantly crashing down on them. It's a mood to be sure, and I would love to visit it myself someday. That kind of appeals to me, wanting to hang out in an ultra-urbanized, neon-blasted Blade Runner environment. Obviously, I don't want to live there, but it'd be very cool to visit. So the adventure also touches on biomods for the first time, which is very cool. There are biomods in this universe, being able to swap out an eye for a robot eye, or obviously Felix's leg, which he lost, was swapped out for a mechanical leg, but his is really, really shitty, and he cannot wait to change it out for something better. It's quite a long procedure, quite an expensive procedure, and there's no insurance. So it's whatever version of it he could afford and was given to him when he lost it, when he was under company contract, obviously. So we visit a biomodder and we get a little taste of what that might look like, that when they get money, if they want to, what could they do to their bodies to make themselves more powerful? But every time you do that, you lose a little bit of your own humanity. It's kind of fun to play with that concept, and I'm excited for them to explore it on their own as well when they have access to a biomodder. So I know I spent most of this talking about world building and the different pieces of Polyphen and how much I really love Polyphen, but I did want to also just take a moment and focus directly on Thorne's backstory. I know a lot of it's already explained in the podcast, but I wanted to address the twist at the end where Thorne's mother comes out of the woodwork and says that she's the one that betrayed him. That was very surprising to Brian, who plays Thorne, and people around the table were like, "What?" And I really loved having that twist. And then Thorne's mother, kind of like dressed like a ninja with a flowing cloak around her tight black leotard, disappears back up the relay instead of going down. So when she went up to the top of the relay and simply vanishes, where did she go? What mode of transportation does she have that could get her away? Especially with the Nexus skimmer circling the data tower. And then, of course, Thorne coming back down the relay and finding that Kano and Brick are dead. All the Nexus goons are gone, but Mara is nowhere to be seen. She was taken by the Nexus goons and, under the assumption of Thorne, is dead. It seems like Nexus didn't care about Thorne at all. They just wanted to find Mara and cover up the crash at Block 6. It seems that Salarist is alive. The Maglev crash into Block 6 needed to be fully covered up to prove that he's dead, there can't be any loose ends. Project Red Wing is still hanging out in the background. This data vault has left orbit around Polyphen and gone elsewhere. The hidden Prometheon base is calling to them with this data cache that they want to be able to access for all of their own individual reasons and to then destroy it to avenge Dr. Voss's own planet and family. It seems like a lot of different plot lines are starting to slowly converge and they're becoming laser focused on making their way to Prometheon. But obviously, that's a little bit in the future. Because in the next episode, we are not reaching Prometheon. We are actually taking a pit stop. They are stopping at a planet called Sibylline, which is where the first alien artifacts were discovered 7 years ago. We're finally going to get a chance to interact with some alien goodness and dive into the lore surrounding that aspect of this sector's history, because of course the alien artifacts are relatively new in the sector, only been discovered, you know, less than a decade ago, but have really accelerated certain technologies and really caused a lot of corporations to completely focus on uncovering alien tech, because whoever can figure out how to activate it and use it will become the richest and most powerful company in the sector. Hands down. So we'll go and we'll interact with that lore a little bit and we'll learn a little bit about the aliens and a little bit about their technology, and it will be a blast. And in addition, someone on the ship has a connection to someone on Sibylline, and we'll get a little bit of an interesting backstory and personal connection for that character. So that's what's coming out next week for you all. Stay tuned for that first Sibylline episode. But for today, that's all I have. I'm going to have to go rest this voice now because I can feel it failing. Hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas. Love you all, and bye for now.
If you're enjoying the show and want to dive deeper into the lore, please check out our Patreon. You'll get ad-free, early access to every episode, plus a whole bunch of bonus content, including the Star Master logs, where I personally break down how the campaign's put together, what I'm planning, what I'm improvising, and what secrets are still waiting in the dark. You'll also get Haley's notes ripped straight from her old-school analog notebook, as well as exclusive character insights, behind-the-scene glimpses you won't hear in the main show, and much more. Support the mission at patreon.com/darkstaradventurecast. And as always, thanks for listening, and keep following that signal.